Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 14th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, City Approves Costco Deal, by Trevor Hawes, Editorial Director. Costco is one step closer to arriving in Midland. On Tuesday, City Council voted unanimously to approve an incentive package to entice the warehouse retailer to Midland. On Friday, the City of Midland announced on its Facebook page that a deal was in the works and that a location had been set. Costco will build a 174,000-square-foot facility between State Highways 191 and 158, slated to be the largest in Texas. Mayor Lori Blong signed the performance-based agreement Tuesday after council members gave their approval. Under the deal, Costco must make a $50 million capital investment into the property and certify that it has created at least 100 new full-time equivalent positions. By doing so, Costco will receive a rebate of 50% from the city of its portion of real and personal property tax for the next 20 years, and a 100% reimbursement of the 1% it collects in city sales tax for the next 30 years. Midland Development Corporation board members at a special meeting Monday approved its reimbursement package, which is not to exceed $6.5 million in a combination of infrastructure and site-related improvements, and through certification of 100 new employee positions being created. One of the hurdles for the market is land cost and the cost of building out here, MDC Executive Director Sarah Harris told the Reporter Telegram in a recent article. Both of those can be prohibitive. Capital improvements include extending Sinclair Avenue west of Loop 250 and constructing a new north-south road. According to a preliminary site plan, Costco will sit on an 18.69-acre site, 1.01 acres of which is an outparcel for future parking. It will be accessible from State Highway 191, a new extension of Sinclair Avenue, and a public road to the east that is yet to be built. The plan also indicates there will be 800 parking spots, not including future expansion. Construction is slated to begin on or before June 1, 2025. Construction is expected to be complete by August 31, 2026. This column is called Commentary. It is entitled, Chevron's Move to Texas, Not Worth Celebrating, by Chris Tomlinson, columnist. Yippee! Another world-class polluter is moving its global headquarters to Houston, bringing a few hundred employees and a fossil fuel business plan unable to adapt to climate change. Chevron's relocation from San Ramon, California, is no surprise, since most of the company has long resided in Greater Houston. CEO Mike Wirth chose low-regulation, zero-income tax Texas to shore up profits. Outside of bragging rights, the move will have almost no impact on the local economy, except, perhaps, to make Houston and Texas more dependent on the oil and gas industry that has caused so much heartache. Yes, I know, I'm supposed to celebrate the arrival of the 10th biggest U.S. corporation, according to Fortune magazine. But another behemoth from a shrinking industry struggling to cope with the energy transition is not something we should encourage. As I explained in a recent Tomlinson's Take newsletter, Texas has a long history of attracting ne'er-do-wells who want to escape their pasts. Last year, California's Governor Gavin Newsom and Attorney General Rob Bonta unveiled a plan to monitor big oil for potential price gouging. Global oil companies have raked in huge profits in recent years by limiting production and driving up prices, something they call capital discipline. We're making major progress with the legislature to hold big oil accountable for fleecing Californians at the pump, Newsom said in a statement. What we're asking for is simple: transparency and accountability to drive the oil industry out of the shadows. In September 2023, Bonta filed a lawsuit alleging Chevron, four other global oil companies, and the industry's leading lobbyist intentionally deceived investors and the public for decades about global warming. Climate change has transformed life on this planet and threatens to cause even greater personal misery and economic loss. California has spent tens of billions of dollars to adapt to climate change and address the damages climate change has caused so far. And the state will need to spend multiples of that in the years to come, the lawsuit alleges. Texas has been home to the highest concentration of Chevron employees for more than a decade. But Wirth's predecessor, John Watson, was reportedly opposed to leaving California. The latest regulatory onslaught, though, was too much for the $273 billion corporation. Texas offers a business-friendly environment, a more affordable cost of living, and better proximity to key counterparts in the service sector, our industry, and academia, the company said in a statement. Governor Greg Abbott's new court system also adds to the business-friendly environment. In June 2023, the governor signed House Bill 19 and Senate Bill 1045 into law, which gave him authority to appoint district and appellate judges to handle commercial civil cases. The House bill's author, State Representative Andrew Murr, Republican from Junction, said he was inspired by Texans for Lawsuit Reform to create, quote, a specialized business trial court to streamline resolutions of business disputes, and by ensuring the court is staffed by qualified and skilled judges, ideally giving businesses confidence in Texas's legal system and encouraging them to incorporate and headquarter in Texas, unquote. Starting September 1st, Texas-based corporations must no longer worry about elected judges handling lawsuits against them. They can rely on Abbott to appoint judges to protect them. The rest of us, meanwhile, must cope with whatever Yahoo makes it through the political party's primaries. Elon Musk is also taken with these new courts. After a judge in Delaware's Court of Chancery blasted Tesla's board of directors for approving a ridiculously rich compensation package, Musk announced he would move Tesla, SpaceX, and Twitter to Texas. At least Musk's companies are forward-looking. The oil and gas industry is all about slowing change and blocking accountability. Every serious scientist and government recognizes we must reduce carbon emissions to slow global warming and protect life as we know it. Consumers will need to stop burning so much oil and natural gas to produce energy, which means we will need a lot less of them. The oil and gas industry must shrink to prevent the worst of climate change. Every time oil and gas profits go bust, Texans promise to diversify the economy. Yet, oil and gas contributed $26.3 billion in state and local tax revenue and royalties in 2023, the Texas Oil and Gas Association reported. Texas Republicans refuse to utter the words climate change for fear of killing their golden goose. Chevron's relocation will make politicians even more unlikely to encourage the changes our economy and climate require. So, pardon me if I don't pop the champagne. This article is entitled Black Bears Make a Comeback in West Texas by B. K. Richter, staff writer. Black bears are back. Well, in West Texas, that is. According to a recent report by the Texas Parks and Wildlife, the black bear is making a significant comeback in Texas. While the report warns some of the sightings could be false, other reports have confirmed that the endangered species, despite any efforts by federal or state programs, have migrated into the Big Bend area, primarily the Guadalupe and Chisos Mountains. At least two subspecies of black bear are thought to occur in Texas: the Mexican black bear, Ursus americanus eremicus, and the New Mexico black bear, subspecies UA ambliceps, said the report by Texas Parks and Wildlife. According to Michael Nickel, a museum scientist at Midland's Sibley Nature Center, there are a few tips to keep in mind when spotting a bear for the first time. One thing is to don't make eye contact with the bear, Nickel explained during an interview with the Reporter Telegram. Eye contact is perceived as being a threat. If you are wearing a jacket or a flannel shirt, then unbutton it and place it over your head to appear bigger, and then slowly back away from the bear. Texas Parks and Wildlife advises that breeding for bears usually occurs during June and July. The young are born in January or February while the mother is hibernating. She normally gives birth to 2 to 3 cubs every 2 years, Texas Parks and Wildlife said in a press release. Nickel said that as far as interactions go, hikers should avoid any type of interaction, especially with a bear cub. While Nickel says bear sightings could potentially prove a big boost for ecotourism within the region of West Texas, he explained that there should never be any contact made with a bear. Don't leave food in your tents or have it accessible where bears can get at it, he said. They are not pets. One wrong move, and that could easily be tragic, not only for the human, but for the bear as well. Nickel reinforced the concept of keeping a safe distance from bears. Occasionally, these types of encounters will happen, he said. Don't give them any opportunity. Texas Parks and Wildlife says it is relatively easy to spot where bears have been. They frequently break the branches of nut-bearing trees while feeding and tear up the ground looking for insects, roots, or tubers. Black bears in Texas especially relish the succulent base of the sotal plant, Desalirion. The report also adds that in desert environments, partially eaten sotal plants are common to find, which is another strong indication as to where bears have been. Both subspecies of bears, the Mexican black bear and the New Mexico black bear, are state-listed as endangered in Texas. This article is entitled City Council to Vote on Hotel Incentive, YMCA Daycare, by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. City Council will take up several items this week, including whether to approve $5 million in funding for a new hotel and allowing the new YMCA to have child daycare. The meeting is scheduled for 10 a.m. Tuesday, August 27th at City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Here is a rundown of what's on the agenda. Hotel funding approval. On Monday, Midland Development Corporation held a special meeting to approve $5 million in funding for the forthcoming Tapestry Hilton Hotel, to be located at 112 South Lorraine Street. City Council will vote Tuesday whether the deal will go forward. The total project cost is $26.6 million. MDC's portion will go toward funding the construction of a 6-story building at the site. Council has already approved a $2 million incentive on behalf of the city by way of property and hotel occupancy tax rebates. Northwest YMCA. A pair of items on the agenda pertain to the Northwest YMCA project. Council will consider approving $1 million in funding from MDC for the widening of Avalon Drive between Mockingbird Lane and Briarwood Avenue. Also, a public hearing will be held on a zoning change so that the forthcoming Northwest YMCA can offer child daycare. At its meeting August 9th, Planning and Zoning Commission members denied this request. However, City Council will make the final decision. Athletics agreements. Council members will consider agreements with several local sports organizations that would allow them to use city-owned property and facilities, such as parks and the Scarborough Sports Complex. The organizations include Boys and Girls Club of the Permian Basin, Greater Midland Football League, Power Sports League, Midland Junior Baseball Association, Midland Soccer Association, Midland Softball Association, Midland United Girls Softball Association, Texas Cricket Club, Under the Lights Flag Football League, West Texas BMX, and YMCA of Midland. City Councilman John Norman, District 2, is the founder and executive director of Power Sports League. Greater Midland Football League and Power Sports League are affiliated in football and cheerleading activities. Farmers Market Agreement. Council members will decide whether to approve a promotional agreement between MDC and Midland Downtown Farmers Market in the amount of $75,000. The contract will last 3 years at $25,000 annually. The farmers market takes place 8 a.m. to noon on Saturdays, rain or shine, at 404 North Colorado Street. Sports Complex Lighting. Council members will consider authorizing the purchase of new lighting at Scarborough Sports Complex. The new lighting will replace old fixtures for which replacement parts are no longer available. Lights will be installed at Astound Broadband Stadium, Momentum Bank Ballpark, the Coterra Energy Pavilion, and the Diamond Club at a total cost of $320,765. The vendor is Wholesale Electric Supply. Emergency Storm Drain Repair. Midessa Underground was called in July to address a sinkhole that began to develop in the area of 4509 Santa Rosa Drive, generally located in Northwest Midland. The cause was found to be the failure of an 18-inch high-density polyethylene storm sewer pipe. The emergency repair cost $103,355.36. Council will vote on approving payment. Landfill Road Rehab. The city is asking for $4.5 million to rehab Landfill Access Road, which has fallen into disrepair. The road is located at South County Road 1110. Citizen Collection Station. The city is requesting approval to hire Onyx General Contractors to construct the West Citizen Collection Station, which will be located at 6400 West Highway 80 near the Big Sky Drive-In. The contract total is $4,404,346.08. CAF Air Show. Council members are asked to approve use of Midland International Air and Spaceport for the annual Commemorative Air Force Air Show. The event features the flying display of vintage military aircraft. It runs September 6th to 8th. MAF Asphalt. The Airports Department is requesting approval of $4,344,835 for the reconstruction of the asphalt apron at Midland International Air and Spaceport. The main apron, located north of the terminal building, was built in 1999. It has begun to deteriorate now that large jet carrier aircraft have been using the apron. The Federal Aviation Administration is also providing funding for the project. Pipeline Permit. The city recommends council members approve a right-of-way license for a 16-inch natural gas pipeline to Targa Pipeline Mid-Continent Westex, which will replace the previous license and last for 10 years. Drainage for I-20. Council will decide whether to approve a drainage easement for the Texas Department of Transportation. The easement is needed for TxDOT's ongoing Interstate 20 construction. County wastewater. The Midland County Utility District is developing a water treatment plant and is seeking to pipe its wastewater to the city's wastewater treatment facility. The city recommends approval. City limits. Council members will consider approving the extension of the city limits to the area of Deauville Boulevard and Arlington Road off of State Highway 191, where the new Mercedes dealership will be constructed. Soup kitchen land. The city is seeking to give an undeveloped portion of Hidalgo Park to Midland Soup Kitchen Ministry, which is located on the southeast corner of the block. Ultimately, Midland voters will decide in November whether to give the land to the nonprofit.
Grapes and back to school is a no-brainer. Research is ongoing to uncover just how grapes may deliver so many health benefits. Numerous studies on grapes and grape products, including table grapes, grape juice, and wine, suggest that table grapes contribute to many things. Studies suggest that grape polyphenols may help protect the health and function of our cells in multiple ways, contributing to antioxidant action and influencing an array of cell communications that affect important biological processes. Research spans across the board from heart health, eye health, diabetes, and more. Grapes come in many different colors, which all have a health attribute to them, so varying up your source can be key. If grapes are on your weekly shopping list, try letting your little shoppers pick which ones they want or try a few. Grapes are a food that most all family members can eat if cut appropriately. If a child is under the age of 5, grapes can be tricky as they are considered a choking hazard, so halving or quartering them can help significantly. 1 cup of grapes provides 62 calories, no fat or cholesterol, 176 mg of potassium, 5% DV, 16 grams of carbohydrate, and 1 gram of fiber. Not bad for the perfect sweet little treat. Outside of providing energy, it also provides a fair amount of water concentration. While it has only 1 gram of fiber, that is considered 3% of your overall daily need, which can be significant for some, as most Americans do not consume the recommended amount. Dietary fiber is commonly recognized as an important factor in weight loss and weight management by functioning as a bulking agent in the digestive system. High fiber foods increase satiety and reduce appetite, allowing you to feel fuller, longer, and help you lower your overall caloric intake. If you couple that with water, you'll be thanking us later. Memorial event is Thursday night in Odessa. As the community reaches the 5-year anniversary of the August 31st, 2019 mass shooting, it's a time for remembrance and reflection. You can be part of that during a Thursday service that will unveil a place to reflect on the campus of UTPB. UT Permian Basin will host the Bright Star Memorial Dedication Sunset Service at 8 p.m. Thursday at the Bright Star Memorial site on the UTPB campus off Loop 338. There will be a ceremony and time to reflect for the victims of the August 31st, 2019 shooting. 7 people were killed and 25 injured. The gunman, Seth Ator, who was traveling between Midland and Odessa during the mass shooting, was shot and killed by multiple law enforcement agencies as they made a final stand in a field near Synergy Theater. Odessa leaders like the Chamber of Commerce CEO Renee Earls and Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said it is still heartbreaking to this day that all those lives were lost and many people injured. Both will attend the Thursday event and urge Odessians to show up. Many years ago, Griffiths recalls his first lieutenant telling him after a family tragedy that there are some things you don't get over. You just learn how to live with it. The mass shooting is one of those things. Just pray to God nothing like this will happen again anywhere. I mean, the killing of innocent civilian people. It's just senseless and just heart-wrenching, not only for those loved ones, but for the community. It's sad, he added. The memorial is 11 feet high and 5 feet in diameter. Executive Director of Odessa Arts, Randy Hamm, has said, created by Maryland sculptor Jim Sanborn, it features the names of all those who were killed or injured and reflections from family members. The sculpture, which will light up at night, will be elevated 20 feet in the air and have a circular entrance path. It also will be ADA accessible. The dedication of the memorial is an example of the way the community comes together time and again to support each other. UTPB has opened its campus to hold the dedication, and different people in the community have come together to make this a reality. Odessians file lawsuit following container fire. Nearly 24 people living on Golder Avenue, West Hillmont, 81st and 83rd Streets, and one business filed a lawsuit Monday against Permian Basin Containers, alleging the company was an environmental disaster waiting to happen, and the recent fires there have caused them to suffer ill health effects, lose their well water, and suffer property damage. According to the lawsuit filed in Ector County District Court, the plaintiffs are also demanding potable water be delivered to their homes in the short term, and in the long term, proper remediation and testing of groundwater and well water. They also want air testing, the removal of toxic and harmful debris, the remediation of their property, and their health issues to be remedied, the lawsuit stated. The lawsuit states that well water is outside TCEQ's jurisdiction, so no state agency is testing the water, and those doing the testing for Ector County don't test for dangerous chemicals. According to the lawsuit, the containers at the site on Northwest County Road were improperly stacked, not labeled, and stored near barrels marked as flammable, danger, and hazardous. The plaintiffs were told the containers were either empty or contained clean water. But that was a lie, the lawsuit alleges. When the fire initially broke out on July the 23rd, the lawsuit alleges residents' eyes burned and teared up and they became nauseous and began to suffer headaches. Some have experienced irritated skin, dehydration, and worsened health conditions, the lawsuit stated. Worse yet, the chemical soup created by the fire and its aftermath were everywhere. The millions of gallons of water used to fight the fire drove a flood surge of hazardous wastewater through the surrounding neighborhood, the lawsuit stated. An orange and black slick, more than a foot deep, rushed across property lines, onto and into homes and cars, coating everything in between, eventually morphing into a ubiquitous black sludge. The water is now in the well water and contains a laundry list of toxic, teriogenic, and carcinogenic compounds, the lawsuit stated. The attorneys for the plaintiffs, Hicks Johnson PLLC of Houston and Liggett Law Group of Lubbock, are seeking more than $1 million for their clients for negligence, trespassing, nuisance, and premises liability, meaning the defendants had actual knowledge or reasonably should have known of the unreasonably dangerous condition, the lawsuit states. According to a news release, one plaintiff, Mark Rodriguez, said everything at their home smells of petroleum. We just paid off the house not even a year ago, but now we're in a contract to buy a new house because I can't go back, Rodriguez said. Ruth Dulhith 69, said in the news release she and her husband Bobby, 82, have paid nearly $8,000 to tap into the city water supply for home use and will no longer be able to build a small RV park to generate additional retirement income. "This is my husband's life work. It's right here," Ruth said of their property. "He planned a retirement, a really good retirement, and they came along and just blew it all to hell." It's fair time in Odessa. The 47th Permian Basin Fair and Expo is back for another week of fun. This year, there is no shortage of events for all ages, games to play, live music to enjoy, competitions to spectate, and much more will be available all week long. This year, the Permian Basin Fair and Expo will begin on Friday and last until September the 8th. The two-weekend event will have something to offer for everyone. Livestock events will be held each day with the full schedule available online. Events will include poultry, steers, heifers, lambs, market goats, swine, and boar goats. Entertainment will come in all shapes and sizes this year, and no matter what your interests are, you are sure to find something to capture your attention. A lively carnival and petting zoo will be available, as well as WTX axe throwing if you're looking for a more unique activity to try. For fans of adrenaline, the off-axis stunt show is sure to thrill with its 25 minutes of nonstop high-energy performances that will leave everyone impressed. The Little Miss and Mr. Permian Basin Fair pageant will be held on Sunday and will be split among four age groups ranging from 4 to 11 years old. This year, a special interactive activity will be available for two nights only. On Tuesday and Thursday, September the 5th, starting at 5 p.m., there will be a scavenger hunt throughout the grounds. Just stop by the fair office to pick up the list. At the end of each night, points will be added up and prizes awarded to the first and second place winners. September 4th will be a special sensory day sponsored by Superior Health Plan, tailored to guests with sensory processing difficulties. Between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m., lights and sounds will be limited so that entire families can enjoy the experience that might otherwise be overwhelming. There will also be great opportunities to learn about the community resources available for those who need help with sensory processing. No matter what kind of fun you're looking for, you'll be sure to find it. Stop by the Permian Basin Fair and Expo any night for the perfect outing. For a full schedule and more information on individual events, visit the Permian Basin Fair and Expo official website. Quick hits. Hendrick meet and greet. Mayoral candidate Cal Hendrick is planning a meet and greet today. Hendrick is challenging Mayor Javier Hoven. Hendrick has a meet and greet planned 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. today at the Shack in the Back, 11610 West Highway 80 East. Eddie Mitchell will challenge current District 1 City Councilperson Mark Mata in November's election. Meals on Wheels Executive Director Craig Stoker is challenging incumbent Dennis Swainer for the Odessa City Council at-large seat. District 2 will feature incumbent Steve Thompson against Nayeli Urias. The races are nonpartisan and are for four-year terms. October 7th is the last day to register to vote. Early voting begins October the 21st and ends November the 1st, and November the 5th is Election Day. Nutcracker auditions. Nutcracker, Magical Christmas Ballet, is coming to Midland at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Auditions for local children to participate in the performance will be held in partnership with Dance Expressions on September 24th. Young dancers ages 6 to 17 are invited to audition through Nutcracker, Magical Christmas Ballet's unique Dance With Us program. The audition is open to all area dance students. Children will be cast as party children, mice, little snowflakes, star sprites, star maidens, and junior corps de ballet for the Act 2 Spanish, Chinese, French, Arabian, and Slavic variations. All costumes are provided by the company. Following the initial rehearsal period, the children's cast will rehearse prior to the show for 6 to 8 weeks at Dance Expressions in advance of the performances at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. There is no instruction fee charged, but Nutcracker Magical Christmas Ballet requires a minimum $50 participation fee from all youth dancers who are cast in the performance to help cover costume maintenance and other related administrative costs. Dancers can sign up to audition today at nutcracker.com/dance. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit nutcracker.com. Special pricing is available for groups. Call 800-320-1733 or email groups@nutcracker.com. Young Odessian places in national cooking competition. Olivia Adams took her cooking to a new level by participating in the K-12 National Cook-Off through Texas Online Preparatory School, or TOPS. The 14-year-old Odessian went to Arlington, Virginia, at the Kitchen of Purpose for the event and was one of 6 finalists. Judges included David Ho, winner of Food Network's Chopped, Isabel Koss, renowned pastry chef, and Daniela Hurtado, director of programs at Kitchen of Purpose. Adams placed 4th overall. First place won $1,000, second place won $500, third place $350, and 4th, 5th, and 6th got gift baskets. The first competition was online, and then the second one was in person. The online one was you just made a dish and you submitted 3 photos and step-by-step process of how you made it. You submitted that, and then judges picked 6 people from 350 students that had entered. They picked the best 6, and we all went to Virginia to do a final competition, Adams said. Adams's mother said it was a timed competition and a blind draw for a protein and a side, and out of that she had to create her dish. From that moment to cooking, plating, and presenting to the judge, Olivia had 60 minutes to create her entree. During that, there are camera crews all around and an interviewer. Adam said parents couldn't be in the room with the competitors, but they could watch on a screen. She made beef tenderloin with mashed potatoes, carrots and asparagus for the main dish, and a no-bake cheesecake for dessert. Olivia's mother, Stephanie Neer, said, "The whole family's into cooking. I cook everything at home. We don't eat fast food. We grow our food. I was born and raised on a farm before I came here. I owned a restaurant for many years, so she's just grown up around it. She gets in the kitchen and she creates her own dishes. She's really good at doing Oriental food. Not much of a baker yet, but we're not big on sweets," Mrs. Neer said. Olivia said that she enjoys cooking and she would like to work her way up and hopefully own a restaurant someday. She enjoys cooking because you can do anything with it. Obituaries. Doris Gary, age 93, of Georgetown, passed away on August the 12th. Visitation and the memorial service was held on August the 22nd. Wadelin Beard passed away on August the 24th. A service will be held Thursday, August the 29th at 11 a.m. at the Hamill Family Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at the Cedar Hill Cemetery in Abilene. Marvin Frummel, age 85, passed away on August the 16th. Family and friends will gather to celebrate Marvin's life at 10 a.m. Saturday, August the 31st, at the McNett Funeral Home Chapel. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. Friday, August the 30th, at McNett Funeral Home. Edward Miles Jr., age 87, passed away on August the 20th. Visitation will be Monday, August the 26th at 10 a.m. at the Cook Walden Capitals Park Funeral Home in Pflugerville, Texas, with a graveside service at 11 a.m. Jose Ibarra, age 76, of Midland, died Monday, August the 19th in Lubbock. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. August the 28th at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. What life insurance plans are offered after 65? By Tony King. Hi, Tony. You recently wrote an article explaining the hospice issues that you were experiencing regarding your mother. Please let your Tony Says Medicare column readers know other ways hospice comforts the caregiver when a loved one passes. My mother's hospice case manager and social worker made sure that I knew exactly what to do for her final needs. I would have to had to pay over $3,000 for cremation, plus $7,000 to bury my mother's urn on top of my father's casket through a well-known funeral home in my area. Instead of the $995 arranged price with a funeral facility that was on the hospice list, my mother passed away with no life insurance, and our family had to pay for all of the extra funeral cost out of pocket. I recently turned 65, have high blood pressure, am retired, and have no life insurance. I do not want my kids to go through what I experienced with my mother. Please explain which life policy I should consider. Thanks from Eva from Houston, Texas. Tony writes, "Hello, Eva. I would love to help you explore your life insurance options after what you experienced with your mother. Many Americans wait too long to purchase a life policy and cannot qualify due to health issues. They do not realize how your health situation can affect applying for an insurance plan. Life insurance can help your family cover your end-of-life costs and ease your peace of mind knowing that there will not be a financial strain caused by unforeseen debt that your family may be responsible for. Eva, let's explore the different life insurance plans that are available for those age 65 and older and whether underwriting may be required for either acceptance or to receive lower premiums. Term insurance. A policy which offers a 10, 15, 20, or 30-year policy period, depending on which insurance company you apply with. Term insurance premiums are lower and do not increase during the plan's specific policy period. These plans can be converted to a permanent whole life plan while the policy is in force. Purchasing term insurance at a younger age and converting to whole life past 65 is an option worth considering. Whole life, a permanent life policy that combines a death benefit, level premiums and cash value growth that can be used for any reason during your lifetime. Whole life policies generally cost more past 65. Choosing a lower death benefit may control the price and be a good option. Final expense burial insurance. A small whole life policy that is meant to help your family pay for your funeral, burial, and other expenses, such as outstanding medical bills after your death. Plans typically range from $5,000 to $25,000 in death benefits, depending on the insurance company. Guaranteed issue whole life. A whole life policy for those with serious health issues who cannot pass medical underwriting for a typical life insurance plan. The policies range from $2,000 to $25,000 in death benefits with no medical exam or health questions to answer. If you die within the first 2 years from natural causes other than accidental, your beneficiaries will only receive all premiums paid plus interest, usually 10%. After the 2-year waiting period, the full benefit is paid for death due to all causes. The variety of life insurance plans to meet the health and financial needs to those past 65. It is important to take your time exploring which option is right for you and your family. Remember, it's what you don't know that will hurt you. If you have a Medicare question, email infotonysays.com or call 832-519-8664. Tony's new Confused About Medicare video series and Tony's Medicare books are available at tonysays.com.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, August 28th, 2024. Midland Health. MMH nurse Mark Fierro wins DAISY Award. Midland Health is delighted to announce that Mark Fierro, a dedicated registered nurse from the emergency department, has been honored with the prestigious DAISY Award. This award is presented monthly to one outstanding RN who embodies our high standards of excellence and compassion in nursing. Fierro's exceptional contributions were celebrated with a heartfelt ceremony in the emergency department, organized by our leadership team. During the event, Fierro received a beautifully leather-bound winner certificate, a hand-carved healer's sculpture, a bouquet of roses, a bouquet of daisies, and some delicious Cinnabon rolls. He was also presented with his nomination and winner DAISY pin, acknowledging his outstanding service and commitment. One particularly moving nomination highlighted Fierro's remarkable impact on both patients and their families. Quote, "I was blown away by his bedside manners. We need more nurses that communicate what's being done to ease a patient's mind. My family member is doing well, communicating, and we are blessed to have him still," end quote, stated the nominator. Kit Bredemus, Chief Nursing Officer at Midland Health, remarked, quote, "Mark's compassionate care and ability to communicate effectively have made a significant difference in the lives of many, and we are grateful to have such an exemplary nurse on our team," end quote. Please join us in congratulating Fierro on this well-deserved recognition. His dedication and kindness embody the true spirit of nursing, and he serves as an inspiration to us all. Thank you, Fierro, for your unwavering commitment to providing exceptional care. You truly make a difference every day. The DAISY Award for Extraordinary Nurses is a testament to the compassionate and dedicated care our nurses provide every day. Established by the DAISY Foundation in memory of J. Patrick Barnes, the award honors nurses who go above and beyond for their patients. Continue to nominate those nurses who make a difference every day. Your nominations help us recognize and celebrate the extraordinary contributions of our nursing community. Learn more about the DAISY Award and how you can nominate a nurse today at MidlandHealth.org. Mpox outbreak. Africa has almost 4,000 new Mpox cases in a week. Abuja, Nigeria. Africa is seeing a rapid increase in Mpox cases with nearly 4,000 reported in the past week, the continent's public health body said Tuesday, as it repeated a plea for long-awaited vaccines, whose arrival this week in the most affected country, Congo, has been delayed. 81 deaths from Mpox were reported in Africa in the past week, bringing the total cases and deaths to 22,863 and 622, respectively. Dr. Jean Kaseya, head of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, told an online briefing. About 380,000 doses of Mpox vaccines have been promised by Western partners, such as the European Union and the United States, he said. That's less than 15% of the doses authorities have said are needed to end the Mpox outbreaks in Congo, the epicenter of the global health emergency. Following Mpox outbreaks outside the African continent in 2022, wealthy countries quickly responded with vaccines and treatments from their stockpiles. However, only a few doses have reached Africa despite pleas from its governments. At the earliest, the first batch of vaccine doses promised to support the new outbreaks in Congo will arrive on September 1st, after delays caused by documentation and emergency authorization issues, Kasaya said. The batch would include 50,000 doses promised by the U.S. government and 15,000 from Vaccines Alliance, GAVI, said Dr. Negashi Nagongo, the Africa CDC Incidence Manager on Mpox. Quote, "It is just a matter of now waiting on the U.S. government on the transfer of those vaccines," end quote, Nagongo said. Congo has also requested at least 2 million doses from Japan of vaccines that are particularly effective in protecting children, he said, with negotiations, quote, "quite advanced," end quote. The new Mpox variant first detected in Congo and blamed for the ongoing outbreaks is already triggering, quote, significant, end quote, community-level transmission elsewhere, Ngongo said. For example, in neighboring Burundi, nearly 800 Mpox cases have been recorded in the last month, he said. The U.S. on Tuesday donated 10,000 doses of Mpox vaccines to Nigeria, where the disease has been common. It is the first known donation to Africa since the current outbreaks. Nigeria has recorded 40 Mpox cases this year, according to Nigeria's CDC. The Africa CDC said it is working on a unified response plan for the outbreaks, which will be presented to African heads of state for consideration at a meeting in September. So far, African countries are promoting health measures and hygiene practices that would slow the spread of the Mpox virus, Kasaya said. Experts, however, have said such measures are difficult to enforce in Congo, where millions fleeing violence are crammed in displaced camps amid a decade-long humanitarian crisis. Quote, humanitarian actors are struggling to control the outbreak due to insufficient resources, end quote, said Heather Kerr, the International Rescue Committee country director in Congo, adding that children are especially vulnerable.
This day in history. Today is Wednesday, August the 28th, and on this date in 1963, during the March on Washington, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his I Have a Dream speech before an estimated 250,000 people in front of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. Also on this date in 1845, the first issue of Scientific American magazine was published. It remains the oldest continuously published magazine in the United States. In 1862, the Second Battle of Bull Run began its Prince William County, Virginia, during the Civil War. The Union Army retreated 2 days later after suffering 14,000 casualties. In 1898, pharmacist Caleb Bradham of New Bern, North Carolina, changed the name of the carbonated beverage he'd created 5 years earlier from Brad's Drink to Pepsi-Cola. In 1955, Emmett Till, a black teenager from Chicago, was abducted from his uncle's home in Money, Mississippi, by two white men after he had allegedly whistled at a white woman 4 days prior. He was found brutally slain 3 days later. In 1957, U.S. Senator Strom Thurmond, a Democrat from South Carolina, began what remains the longest speaking filibuster in Senate history, 24 hours and 18 minutes, in an effort to stall the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1957. In 1968, police and anti-war demonstrators clashed in the streets of Chicago as the Democratic National Convention nominated Herbert H. Humphrey for president. In 1988, 70 people were killed when three Italian Air Force stunt planes collided during an air show at the U.S. Air Base in Ramstead, West Germany. In 2013, a military jury sentenced Major Haidel Hassan to death for the 2009 shooting rampage at Fort Hood that claimed 13 lives and left 30 people injured. In 2016, six scientists completed a year-long Mars simulation on the Big Island of Hawaii, where they emerged after living in a dome in near isolation on Mauna Loa. Dear Dr. Roach, is there a research group studying the after effects of COVID? My husband has been exhausted since the second bout of COVID in June of 2023. This is not simply being tired, it is exhaustion. Our physician has ordered multiple tests for his heart, lungs, etc., and nothing else turns up. While speaking with friends who have had COVID, they say that lingering symptoms continue. Some continue to experience things such as vertigo, daily, an inability to walk without a walker, a persistent runny nose, a nagging cough, tiredness, etc. Do you know where else these after effects are being gathered to enable scientists to further their research in this area? Dr. Roach responds, Most people feel pretty much back to normal within a few weeks after COVID infection. But you have pointed out only a small fraction of the symptoms that people can experience after COVID infection. A recent study has shown an increase in autoimmune diseases, for example. How often this happens is hard to know for sure, but I have read estimates that somewhere between 6 and 15% of people will have at least one persistent symptom after a COVID infection. People who are older and heavier are at a higher risk, as are women compared to men. Pre-existing lung or psychiatric conditions can predispose people to persistent symptoms. The worse the COVID symptoms are, the more likely someone has persistent symptoms. More evidence has recently been published showing that people who are up to date with their vaccines receive some protection from long COVID. New vaccines are expected to be released in the fall. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Dear Abby, my young adult child came out to us as transgender several months ago. My husband and I, along with her sibling, are supportive and love her unconditionally. She recently decided to share the news with her grandparents, sending a heartfelt email along with a couple of resources specifically for grandparents. One grandparent has been completely supportive, immediately started using the correct name and pronouns, began doing some research, and continues to treat her as the amazing young adult she is. The other grandparent sent a text that pretty much said, "We love you because you're family, but we don't really support you." They have had no contact since. My child is extremely disappointed, and my heart breaks for her. She, and we, knows she may lose friends and family over this, but I guess we always hoped grandparents' love was unconditional. What advice do you have for her and for us to continue to support her? Dear Abby responds, "Your daughter is fortunate to have loving, supportive parents, siblings, and one grandparent who is willing and able to accept her as her true self. She needs to be prepared for the fact that not everyone will do that. The other set of grandparents appeared to be less open to learning and less flexible in what they are able to accept. Your daughter should continue on her path and not permit their judgments to define her. If she can do that, she'll be happier." And another dear Abby. "Last year, my husband and I relocated to my hometown, which I left 40 years ago. We are happy with our choice to return. Our problem is my friend Shirley, who I have known since grade school. Shirley has always been a high achiever, but lately she has been taking credit for our positive life decisions. At the dinner party we threw to thank neighbors and childhood friends for supporting us through our move, Shirley dominated the conversation about her role. When I reconnect with former classmates, if she is around, she inserts herself and makes the conversation about her, or puts me down by making passive-aggressive comments. Shirley's had a rough life, so I have chalked it up to her needing a win. But now she's doing this with my husband, and it has crossed the line. She didn't do this when we lived out of state. What can I do to put our friendship back to a more equal footing?" Dear Abby responds, "Please reread your letter. The person you have described is not a friend. She's an insecure, jealous individual you happen to have known for a long time. She needs to be the center of attention regardless of how it makes you appear. Do not fool yourself into thinking you can make someone like this into a friend. The less you see of Shirley, the better off you and your husband will be." And you can write to Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.